Here's my helicopter. Haven't heard my helicopter joke before?
No.
There was a flood. And there was a fundamentalist Christian who said, I'm not worried. I'm going to put my faith in God.
I've heard this.
Oh, okay. I'm going to put my faith in God. And so the town rescue squad was figuring out who needed to be rescued, and they sent a canoe out to this guy. And the guy said, nope, I'm staying here. I'm putting my trust in God. And so the water rose up. And, you know, the town said, this guy's going to drown. We better send another rescue boat. So they sent another rescue boat. And the guy's on the top floor of his house. Nope, I'm going to put my trust in God. The water went up and up and up. He's on the roof. And the town said, we've got to rescue this guy. So they sent out a helicopter. Helicopter came down. The guy says, nope, I'm putting my trust in God. The water kept rising and he drowned. So he went to heaven. And he said, I put my trust in you, God. And God said, well, I sent you two boats and a helicopter. It's the only clean joke I know.
Just see that thing on the news about the fellow who said he was going to Christianize a lion?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Jumped in over things and into this thing with lions in a zoo. I
think. Who Christianized whom?
The lion. He's going to Christianize the lion.
Doesn't he know that lions eat Christians?
Now that's pragmatism.
He said, come on, bite me, bite me. God will protect me. Oh, I am very bite. He's stuck, you know, God would let the lion bite. Christianize the lion. Sure.
So
absolutely. No, he's just got a big bite on his leg. No, the only person in critical condition right now is Yasser Arafat. More power to him.
Where did this take place?
Taiwan.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like schizophrenia. I had a patient one time that came in the middle of the night.
Who, Yasser Arafat?
No.
Oh, the guy.
Onset of schizophrenia said and the police had fished him out of a fountain. It was in the middle of winter. He said, well, I wanted God to know how much I loved him by baptizing myself in this fountain. The only thing was, see, it was the middle of winter. And it was like zero out, but same thing.
So I got pneumonia.
They announced that Bush's press conference that Yasser Arafat had passed away.
Oh, damn.
However, then on PBS coming over, they said that was not confirmed yet. But
I heard he was close to it, but no, I didn't hear that he really was really close. Well, I wonder what kind of a wild person.
I didn't know he was that ill. When he started getting treatment, but you know that maybe he's been in bad shape for months and years.
Well, he's looking terrible.
Okay, 238. Well, the last paragraph.
Are we still reviewing?
Hmm?
Are we still reviewing?
No.
Okay.
The U is over.
Okay.
238.
Yeah, it went down the side.
Oh, I did went down the side.
Went down the side.
So we're done.
It's
over. Yeah.
She summarizes now. The relation between the author and wisdom, described in the opening chapters, has undergone a remarkable change. At first, they confronted one another alone in a shattering encounter, after which they both sank into the darkness of the abyss. Remember all that? That was all the dark imagery. Then wisdom promised to make the alchemist her son. We just reviewed that. It was on page 231. Her son lover, if he rescued her, knowing and understanding. Afterwards, following the warning about the son of iniquity, we talked about that too, the danger of the unintegrated shadow when this experience is raging, and the admonition to careful and diligent work, and that's the ego, that's the masculine. She then appeared surrounded by ministering spirits and finally in masculine form as the divine judge. That's the danger of the fragmentation, and then the masculine judge to make sure the ego can deal with this experience. In the midst of the righteous who have been saved, the whole throng having the appearance of a dove covered with gold and silver. Again, the image of multiplicity, because the masculine came in a controlling way, and due to the threat of the experience, it couldn't, in Jung's word, follow its own teleology. Does that make sense if I use that word? Its own goal-directedness. It will take you somewhere. If you can stand, I'm not going crazy. The central symbol has become a plurality, and the alchemist is only one among many, secretly included in the image of the dove as a compound of wisdom and phileus. In other words, that's still the fragmentation, that there is no clear, separate, unifying image presented. This pluralization, that's the fragmentation, this pluralization may have something to do with the previous reference to evil, that is to say, with the fact that there has been no conscious and individual confrontation with the shadow. Again, what we've said. So this is making sense. Does it all sound familiar? And how all these parts fit together into one experience. The moral problem thus remains a collective one. The righteous are saved, the unbelievers damned. Again, that should make sense, I hope. The reconciliation of light and dark that can take place only in the individual so that the reconciliation of light with dark can take place only in the individual so that the avoidance of the encounter with the shadow brings about a pluralization and regression to the dominant collective views. So that all make sense? The fragmentation, there is not the awareness of the new self coming through. And in its place comes the old unconscious state, which, you know, gets a summer job and then takes a vacation. And then can't understand why she got fired. Right. That is the absence of that synthesizing factor.
Would that be part of a not taking responsibility?
Another way to say it is you're not taking responsibility. There's just nobody there to take the responsibility.
The boss didn't have to give it 2 weeks off either.
His
boss wouldn't. He's contributing to that, in a sense. Yeah. To her sense of she'll never learn if she keeps running into situations like that.
Yeah, well, she heard it from me, so we'll see. We'll see. I still don't think she got it, really. That's the obtuseness of the unconscious. It doesn't, it can't add two and two. And then the corollary to fragmentation is collective identification. You ape the prevailing views rather than develop your own because you need something to hold you together. We talked about the corporate personality. I felt this is the epitome of that. You belong to this club, but if you look at these people inside, you'll see there are immense of contradictions. And the only thing that keeps them from living a contradictory life is they follow rules that somebody else gave them. But then always at the expense of a collective shadow problem, shadow projection.
A lot of that going on.
That's totally what's going on. The new sun is identified with Christ. So rather than seeing this new image that would surface out of the experience as a piece of my identity, I am captivated by the numinosity of the experience, and I say, oh, that is Christ, and I don't ask about its individual meaning for me. And that's what's happening here. That's the danger of the rather than take the new image that's coming up in my unconscious, which is very fascinating and very highly charged, very positive.
Scary.
Then, and scary. What you can do is say, oh, that's Christ.
Don't want to collect the views.
Pardon?
It's still outward.
And it's still outward. Right.
As opposed to bringing it in.
And so even if it is Christ, let's say, I would say to such a person to stay in their metaphor, what is Christ asking of you? And Christ may not be asking of you what you think Christ has been asking. This is the problem. So the new...
This is very difficult for a non-theist to grasp.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry.
Christ. Just was reading this. The new sun identified the dominant collective view. The new sun is identified with Christ, whose body, in quotes, by tradition, consists of the multitude of the righteous. Is this, we're getting into the Savior thing here? Well, are we identifying Christ with Jesus?
She's talking about the Catholic view that the church is the body of Christ.
Well, they're the righteous, the church.
But it's a multiplicity.
Only the belief that brings about
it's still fragmented.
Still fragmented, and instead of experience, there's the...
I got it.
More of a comment, well, some of it. Hilden writes in his latest book, A Terrible Love of War, that Western consciousness is Christian, whether you're a believer or not.
Yeah.
But that it has so suffused how we, the worldview, that we really can't get around it. I'm not doing justice to his explanation of it, but it kind of convinced me that if there's a validity to that viewpoint, to at least acknowledging that viewpoint, even if one doesn't necessarily embrace all the specifics of the doctrine.
Yeah, our egos are Christian, whether we're Christian or not.
Yeah, that's his kind of point. I
thought
it was pretty compelling.
Yeah.
So this sort of fits in, I guess what's coming up for me is the fundamentalism that today, I'm just telling me, the fundamentalism that's out there that seems to be something that people are pulling in and
because we're fearful as a nation, so we got to pull in something and
misconstrued. It's not what it is. And sort of like this, what this Christ image is doing.
Yeah, you could say the religious right would be like that figure of Yahweh with the Christ with the Yahweh characteristics that we saw come up a couple of passages ago because the experience was too hot.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of what Thomason was really playing with was very similar to what we're going through today as a whole.
I would say it's almost identical.
Yeah.
That's why it's so relevant, even though it's 700 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A young man waited in the restaurant after out Tuesday morning, and we asked him if he voted. He said he was 19. Did you vote? No, he said. Our church doesn't believe in it. I said, oh? Would you like to explain that to me? He said, we believe that God chooses who he wants. We don't have to.
He's the guy in the helicopter. That's who he is.
He's the guy on top of the roof.
Yeah, he's the guy on top of the roof.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I thought, okay, I won't say a word.
Yeah. Well, I think we all have.
Well, I did say I told him he wouldn't go to hell if he decided to vote. I said, well, I'm not registered. I can't.
We all have this Christian bias of the ego. That's one thing I would like you to say. That makes
it's
sense.
It's all about the right and wrong.
It's all about right. I'll give you an example where this hit me.
Whether it's Christian, in all groups.
When I was in the Peace Corps, I was, I don't think I mentioned this to you, I was walking down the street, all my colleagues were Buddhist. I'm not Christian, but, you know, I certainly feel some. I wasn't Buddhist, exactly. And when we were walking down the street, and we were always having discussions about West versus East, pretty good-natured. There was a small, little, poor farming town, and a police jeep backed up over a farmer's vegetable stand and drove off. Police vehicle did that.
Wow.
And I said, there you go. There's your Buddhism. I was upset, and they were not upset. See, that's the Christianized ego. And the guy said to me, that was his karma. See the difference? The Christian ego got upset, and then the Buddhist ego did not get upset because that was karma. And then he said to me, and again, this is, I think, the beauty of these cultural exchanges. He says, look, you're feeling morally superior because you have rules, but you don't follow them. We don't have rules, and when we feel like being kind, we are. What's the difference? I have to say, yeah, point there. But yeah, that's the difference between, I could never live like that. Okay. I get indignant, and getting indignant is a heritage of the Christian civilization. So that's an example. We're oriented toward the light, and we're oriented toward the right.
And we're
oriented toward the right,
both light and not right wing, but the correct.
Okay.
As we build bombs ready to blow up the world. I mean, it's these things are not. When you look at small examples, it's black and white. But when you look at the big picture, it's not black and white anymore. And that knowing our personal solution is but one among many possibilities of how you live life, and maybe there isn't one better than the other, helps you then relativize, okay, this experience is asking me to change, and change into what, and from what. I think that helps.
I wonder if somebody is, you know, from one culture, but they're raised in another, doesn't that really...
I think it really messes them up, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, let's go on. 239... but such shall be to me a beloved son. Such is the multitude, right? Such shall be to me as a beloved son. Behold ye him, beautiful above the sons of men, at whose beauty the sun and moon wonder. For he is the privilege of love and heir, in whom men trust, and without whom they can do nothing. Let's look at... Yeah, that's it.
And then in the next, right below, it says exactly the opposite.
How's that?
And his beauty... At whose beauty the sun and moon wonder, and then it says the sun is, alchemically understood as part of the union of the sun and moon.
Right, okay. Now, that's the important point. What is her point there? Did you follow that?
Yeah.
Okay. So the idea is that the sun and the moon wonder at this new thing. As if the sun and the moon were parents.
Yeah.
And that takes it out of the personal realm, and it expresses this as a purely cosmic event, which absolves the ego the responsibility of going through the experience. That's what she finds is problematic about that formulation. It's the sun and the moon as parents is a very typical alchemical image. That's how she makes the link. Partly it's knowing some of the background of alchemy. And then she, in the second paragraph after that quote, in the Missal, it's the Catholic liturgy, liturgical book, the words from Psalms 44:3, "Thou art beautiful above the sons of men," are referred to Christ. In Aurora, on the other hand, the sun is understood alchemically as a product of the union of the sun and moon. But the point there is that... what we have seen in this experience is that from within, for the person who is undergoing the experience, the unconscious will generate a new image. Now that would be expressed in alchemical metaphor as the philosopher's stone or something like that. But the text equates the goal to Christ again. so that the solution is projected outwardly at this moment in the experience. It's not taken inwardly. And another way you see that is in the cosmic imagery. So what we're seeing now is how he has dipped into the experience, and now how he's skimmed it and is coming off of it. And what does it look like then in dreams when you aren't going in deep? Well, you get these cosmic images.
When you're not going in deep?
The personal...
I mean, the sun and the moon?
The sun and the moon. It's not to say that all images as the sun and the moon are negative, but when you get these cosmic images without a human presence, then what's happened is you've abdicated your relationship to the unconscious for simply going through what the unconscious is producing. See the difference?
But now, if he saw himself in that dream, it would have been different.
It would have been different if there had been a person in there, not a multiplicity. If there had been a person in there, and if...
What do you mean, not the sun and moon, you mean?
No, if there, in addition to the sun and moon, there had been somebody witnessing this. And if there had not been a reference to Christ, it would be more likely that the person were hearing what is coming up out of the experience. Does that make sense?
So if there had not been a...
The reference in the text uses language to the Catholic liturgy, which is used to refer to Christ. So the text is saying, oh, look, we've gone through this terrible experience, and now Christ is born. That's basically what it's saying.
So he's going back to the old paradigm.
He's going back to the old paradigm.
And you know, the new one would be the Sophia thing.
Sophia, or an alchemical image, because the alchemists thought it was inside.
Alchemical image, like what if it's a star or something like that? Is it the same?
Probably would be the same. It would be, if there was no individual present, it would be that...
No, if there was an individual present.
Then it would be more likely that they are hearing what is going on. Now, do you understand what I mean when I say hearing what's going on?
Being able to integrate the experience.
Put that in other words, integrate the experience, just to make sure we're all on the same wavelength here.
Well, to me, it would be like bringing that, whatever that's outside, into almost an inner experience that's physical. I mean, bringing it into that inner realm where I'm actually being able to relate or be able to feel that connection.
Now, there's still something else, though.
You're talking about being conscious of it?
Yeah. A change is being asked in the way he looks at life.
Oh, a change.
Yeah. That's what is so threatening. Because what this experience is asking him to do, in essence, is see the futility of his medieval way of looking at things and to develop a new understanding of what sacred is. And, of course, there is just no way that can occur. So that's one of the reasons this because the ego can't receive the new attitudes that would that the experience is asking it to receive. The change of attitudes. Change of attitudes, change of behavior. Then the experience just keeps going.
Right. Now, if there's a question in that experience, though, that you understand, is that part of the hearing?
I don't follow you.
Well, you have that, whatever that is, with the person I actually had where the star, you know, the experience, the witnessing, but I actually was being asked to choose, and then, you know, choose love.
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah, yeah, that's different then.
Yeah.
I see what you mean, yeah. But you see, the key word you used was choose. Mm-hmm. It's asking for a different choice about the way things are. Right. So we're dealing on, maybe this is too, Mary, what you were getting at a little bit. We're dealing on two levels. We're dealing with the unconscious experience, and then it's asking us for a concrete, specific attitudinal and behavior change.
Right. And because he didn't get that, then he was not too
good. Then he's not too
good. Gotcha.
Right. Yeah. And I want to say that because we spend so much time on the symbolism, you know. We go into this, of course, this is not Jung 101. This is like Jung 700,000,002. We go into the symbolism so much because I find that's the challenge in our work is to be able to recognize these images. But we're always at the final in the final account, looking for a behavior change. And we've got to be able to see what that is, too.
Why did I ask all these questions?
And why did you take this stupid class to begin with?
No, the next page explains it all.
Oh.
I mean, to my satisfaction.
It's a little bit like in The Matrix. He said, why did I swallow the red pill? Why didn't I take the blue pill? Why didn't I take the blue pill? See, this is definitely red pill stuff. And she sums up on 240, halfway down the style. Before the quote, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines up. The style is once more that of an annunciation or a hymn. Christ. It's an exaltation of Christ. A praise. In the end, it's decidedly didactic. In other words, you're being extolled to take Christ again.
Where are you?
240 before the quote, four lines up.
Okay.
With the disappearance.
See, this is, well, like, clarified. Did the author understand the albedo in a religious sense? Or did he interpret the religious symbolism? Well, he did the religious symbolism.
Right. Right.
And that's what I was looking at. Why?
Right. Right.
Okay.
And why? Because the ego is too.
Because
true.
I know.
And there are no categories at hand to help him understand his behavior.
Nothing
change.
At all.
That vast cultural shift that was being announced. The styles once more in this. With the disappearance of the dark elements, everything personal has vanished. The next passage.
Yeah.
You okay so far?
Yeah.
Wisdom or the apocalyptic. That word, apocalyptic.
Apocalyptic. Apocalyptic, yes.
My Greek is getting in there.
It's Greek to me.
Joke.
Okay. 240. But he that hath ears to hear, let him hear what the spirit of the doctrine saith to the sons of the discipline concerning the seven stars. One of the seven stars we had earlier. By which the divine work is wrought, and of these senior treateth, well, senior is an alchemist, treateth in his book in the chapter of the sun and moon, saying, after thou hast made those seven, which thou hast distributed through the seven stars, and hast appointed to the seven stars, and hast purged them nine times until they appear as pearls, this is the whitening. Now, the image that we want to focus here on is the stars and the whitening.
The seven stars episode?
Well, we had that in the, where was that? 237. There thundered the voice of him who holdeth the seven stars in his hand. That was a reference to the apocalyptic Christ in, I didn't bring it with me, in Revelation, who appears with seven lampstands. And that is a reference to Zechariah, in which the eyes, in which seven candles are likened to the seven eyes of Yahweh who roam the earth. Which means that that's a throwback to the old traditional imagery of Yahweh. So that the seven stars is the consciousness associated with Yahweh. Remember what that consciousness is? Right and wrong.
Yeah.
Judgmental.
Also looks like a side reference to early astrology.
And it's also a reference to astrology, sure. Now, remember, right and wrong has its place. If you're working with somebody who's irresponsible, and they, I didn't really use the word right or wrong, but I could say to that friend, you know, taking 2 weeks off is wrong. That is the kind of talk you need to do to people who don't make sensible decisions. But where you do make sensible decisions, that then gets in the way. As if my therapist friend would have said, having these feelings for that woman is wrong. See the difference. I just want to make sure you know I know there's a difference. Here it is again a regressive image because the ego is weak. And what it leads to is whitening.
What that leads to is whitening.
What the seven stars are followed by in the text is the theme of whitening. Now, should we talk about the theme of whitening in alchemy? The alchemists thought you started out with a piece of base material, and that base material was black. And you cooked it, and it turned black or whatever, until it turned white. And you could think, in their mind probably, that white was the ashes. Jung is, of course, taking it as metaphor for this process whereby you start with a difficult emotional setup and you eventually get clarity. So that white has to do with clarity. In our work...
So the whitening is clarity?
The whitening would be clarity. In our work, following the alchemical metaphor, we'll start with somebody who's in a difficult situation and help them understand what it's about. And when they begin to understand what it's about, sure enough, they dream of white. But that's just the first phase, because that is a mental understanding. And for that understanding to be made real, they have to begin to feel it. And then the dreams are about red. And that red would be the feeling of really understanding and doing something about what you have previously intellectually understood.
What if you do it backwards? What if you dream of red first and then...
Well, this is a scheme. And it's got as many exceptions as it's got the rule. But...
Is it possible that one can do things in different order?
Yeah. But I think, let's say, even if you do have red, you're going to get the black. Probably. Unless you've been through black.
So red is the feeling values? Is that what you're...
Red would be the emotional feeling associated with the experience. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard people say, oh yeah, you know, the reason I do that is because my mother did this. So that's white. It's said in a detached way, and it's almost used to justify the pathological behavior. Yeah, the reason I have a temper is because my dad was mean to me. Something like that.
And the black is what?
The black is the depression that starts the thing off. And the white is the insight, the first insight. And the red then is when that insight becomes emotional.
But the white is still not that they haven't integrated it, or they're just still taking responsibility for it yet?
It's the first step.
First step, okay.
And then eventually that red will turn into gold or yellow.
But the black is the first step?
Yeah, black, white, again, it's a schema.
Right.
Okay, so be careful with not taking it too seriously. But black, white, red, yellow. Yellow is gold.
Yeah.
Does it come that quick because it took so many steps to get to that?
No, it doesn't. And you know, these are as dangerous as they are helpful, probably. But, you know, you can get them all mixed up. But I think if you, let's say you're working on a difficult emotional issue, this is maybe it will make a little more sense. Say a two-year project of working, you know, through a broken heart or a shift to your creativity or separating from a marriage or whatever. I think over time, if you go back and you look, you will see that there is an emphasis. In this phase, there were more black dreams. In this phase, there were more white dreams in this phase. It doesn't mean you can't have a white dream before a black dream at some point. But on the whole, I think it's fair to say you will see some prevalence of these themes.
Could it be that there's different sections of this problem that are being addressed?
And it could be that you are different places on different aspects of the same problem. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Now, is purple the combination of red and yellow?
No.
Purple would be like gold.
Yeah.
Or
red. Sometimes it says cloth.
The other way purple often shows up is people who don't want to do black.
Oh, I'm just talking about here.
In the alchemical.
Because,
see, it's the goal without having gotten there.
Think of purple right. Like bruise.
But is there a point when we talked about where you can go, where the process, where you can spell the gas without going to liquid? What's that?
That would be part of this process, purple. Yeah. That would be like the white. Solid to gas would be the white.
Okay. Solid to gas is the white. Okay. Didn't we talk about that somewhere? Okay, yeah. All right. So that's the white.
Okay. You know, I have. Let's stop for a second.
Okay.
The problem is that we're wanting this to make sense.
Why not?
To give you a full answer, which will make no sense, but it's true, is that solid to gas can be black to white, and it can also be black to gold. It can be either. Problem with all of this stuff is that these things can be different things at different times, in different contexts. And in different people. But I think primarily in different contexts. You always have to look at the context. You learn the range of possibilities, and then you see what fits the context. And you have to live with contradictory explanations.
My copy is that not one deals with black right
now.
Maybe. I don't know.
So then the gold would be meaning?
Gold would be the meaning, the new identity, the resolved situation, the coherence, the new life, creativity, the positive value, a working life again. It's the end point. Now, having done that, what is wrong with this text?
It's translated from another language.
First of all, it's translated. Symbolically, you should see a red flag.
And what we just read?
In that paragraph. It's what she has explained, but I want to see if you can pick it up without...
About the seven stars and lightning?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with
that? Should see a red flag, huh?
Should see a red flag.
Well, is it going back to like the right... Well, yeah, it is going back.
Yeah, you're on the right, you're in the right direction. The lightning comes from the right and the wrong.
Okay.
You see, this process will produce a light of its own, an understanding of its own. And what has happened in this text is that the old sense of right and wrong has been brought in to provide clarity. Those seven stars were Yahweh. That's Yahweh's way of looking at things. So he goes to right and wrong and he says everything's in order. But he's missed the meaning of the experience. He's regained stability at the cost of hearing the meaning of the experience. Because the real light would be the Sophia light.
So he doesn't just go from point A to, he doesn't go in a sequence.
He does not.
He regresses.
He goes from black to white.
He goes from black to white.
Right.
Repeatedly.
Yes. So he
repeatedly.
Yeah.
With some steps of progress.
But didn't you say that was part two there sometimes for the survival? I mean,
oh, yeah.
It was doing to, you know.
This is not untypical. That's why we're going into it.
Now,
this is how it works.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't go smoothly. If it went smoothly, I'd get out of a job. It goes very slowly, and it goes in a very confused way.
Right.
And you have, again, if you're sitting where I'm sitting, it's my job, I feel, to know, where are we? At what point in the confusion are we? So I can keep track of that. And it'll start over again. And it'll go again. It'll start over a little bit ahead of where it started last time, but it'll get stuck. Complicated.
Yes. Well, I think in recognizing, like you said, recognizing it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, to see that you're in that.
To recognize where it's going wrong and to know why it might have to go wrong.
Right.
And to support the person in that wrongness until such time as there's strength for it to go right.
No, but even applying that to yourself as you're doing that, is that, you know,
yeah.
You're supporting your own.
Sure.
Allowing that, you know, give it time or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Gary, it's my understanding, too, that the more archetypal the change is, the longer the process, because he literally is shifting culture.
Absolutely.
It's just a personal
experience
that he's trying to gain some sort of new essence. He literally is gaining new consciousness. So the more archetypal, meaning outside of himself,
the
longer this is going to take, because he doesn't have the reference point.
Absolutely. That's, so everybody get that?
Try to get this too personalized and try to get into, well, this is Christ or whatever. It's the archetype of it.
Yeah.
That's what we're going through right now.
Yeah, he's going through what we're going through.
Right. And many people are going through that right now for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you feel like it's taking forever, but that's because the archetypal pieces take.
Yeah, he's not just growing. His growth is a mirror of the growth between two millennia.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So for him not to go back and forth, he would die otherwise. Mm-hmm. It would be too much for him to pull in.
Yeah, he does die, and I think that's why. It's just too much.
Well, from our vantage point, historically, though, we can see the change, the birth of the enlightenment and consciousness and stuff, and see what was revealing itself in that. It lies ahead in the future, but it's also sort of presaging itself in the images that are coming up. Well, liking that to our time, what lies ahead of us in time for the kind of consciousness that we're going to break through to, compared to where we're at now, what images are coming up for us now. And there are a lot, it's mirrored tremendously in this kind of medieval worldview thing mirrored now. But it is curious about this time aspect.
The old myth doesn't want to die.
No,
it's doing everything it damn well can.
Just been elected president.
That's what we're in right now. It doesn't want to die, goddammit, and we're not going to let it happen.
And we're not going to let it die.
And those of us that want to keep it moving have to stay awake in that and just keep trusting that we are in this long process. As he was, my gosh.
Yeah, I tell you, and what's...
We have the ability to sort of process this in a way. I can imagine being in this space.
What's also powerful is to see this hit 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
That is amazing. It seems to be hitting younger and younger people, exactly what they're going through.
And just in my program at Pacifica, it used to be all middle-aged people. Now it's the 20-year-olds that are
getting
in the program. Half of my class is under 30.
No kidding.
And they get very incensed when we talk about young things as midlife work. But they're,
funny. Because they're having their midlife crisis at 20.
Yeah. You're so exactly right. That's what we've been talking about.
Yeah. Incidentally, you'll never see Yvonne Franz referring to that in her later writings.
To midlife.
Yeah. That she, I think by the time he died, it was still culturally occurring.
Right.
But
right.
She, living longer, realized it was happening to more and more young people.
Well, we have more tools for self-reflection. And so for the adults, we're passing that on to our children.
Yeah.
They can come to it earlier than we ever could because our parents didn't have those capabilities.
I think that's the hopeful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Paul saw the upheavals in the 60s in Europe and stuff there. He saw that was having some on people.
Well, let's see. I think let's finish the chapter. So at least we've done something. Well, I hate to rush through this. I'll rush through this, and then we'll come back and pick up with it. I think it's so beautiful. On 242, second paragraph. On closer examination. No. I gotta.
Can you skip that? Possibly skip that paragraph about the union or heaven and earth?
No. Where are you going to get all this far, all this way without union? I'm sorry. You don't want me to skip it. You're saying you do.
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I misunderstood you.
It's so psychological.
Okay, you win. The union of heaven and earth is a favorite alchemical image for the conjunctio. A Hermes quotation said, "It is needful that heaven and earth be conjoined," which is a philosophic word. Or again, the male is the heaven and the female.
Of the female.
The heaven of the female, and the female is the earth of the male.
Yes.
You like that?
Oh, absolutely.
An anonymous Greek author says, "Heaven above, earth below, through the male and the female, the work is accomplished."
See, the thing is, of the female and of the male. So,
male is the heaven of the female. And the female is the earth of the male.
It's beautiful.
Does that not just say how men have treated women? Like a piece of dirt.
Oh, now, come on. No.
It
doesn't say that. Oh, they may have, but that's not what that passage
is. Oh, I can't say. I had to bring that up.
I guess you did.
Women,
yes.
And women.
Oh, I'm in love. I'm in heaven. Oh.
Of course, then they get to know their animus and they see who the real person is.
I know.
The black earth is in the title, is obviously the receptive element which absorbs planetary forces. This not only agrees with the general views of Mother Earth in antiquity, but is borne out by the chemical text. For instance, to Ethusius' question, whatever that is, Rosinius answers Terra Nigra. Do we have a translation? Or I didn't even...
Black
Earth. What is women? Black Earth.
Black Earth.
All this suggests very strongly that the earth is identical with the sublime figure of wisdom at the end of the preceding chapter. Now, this is the part I like. On closer examination, this is really a tremendous thought. The wisdom of God in the Bible was the playmate of Yahweh, who was with him before the beginning of the world. In patristic literature, she was, as we have mentioned, defined as the archetypal world, or as the sum of the eternal ideas in the mind of God. The prototype from which he created all things. She may also be compared with the Indian Shakti or Maya and with the Gnostic Sophia. Now, here comes the important sentence. And yet, in our text, this figure is equated with the soul of the dark earth. All the images of darkness we've had. The impure prima materia. So where Mary, the mother of Christ, is pure, we now have a shift that the divine thing is connected with the impure. See, that's the breakdown of the split between matter and spirit. Alchemy accordingly lays upon man the task and confers upon him the dignity of rescuing the hidden feminine aspect of God from imprisonment in matter by his opus and of reuniting her with the manifest masculine deity. So that is putting in a beautiful language what we've been saying in a rather crude way, that this experience starts with a bodily, instinctual, sexual, aggressive upheaval. And then we try to transform it to see how it is a precursor of our discovering our greater purpose in life. That takes us to 242. We'll finish. I don't want to rush through this rest of stuff. I'll come back and redo that next time, and then we'll we'll finish with 243, and I suspect you can read to the end of, probably won't get there, but you could read to the end of chapter 7, which is page 160. 260. Questions? Thoughts, feelings, reactions? Thank you for your hard work, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Saturday, not
and hope to see some of you Saturday.
Yeah.
For a blockbuster presentation.
Yeah. We'll see.